in the grim darkness of the far future. Can love truly exist? It sounds absurd, a candle flickering in a hurricane of war. Warhammer 40,000 is a galaxy consumed by eternal conflict, where there is only war, or so they say. But what if I told you that even in this bleak universe of bolters and bloodshed, love not only exists, but stubbornly endures? Yes, love, romance, family, all the warm, mushy human stuff, it survives amidst the carnage. In fact, those rare sparks of affection might be the only things more explosive than a plasma grenade. Surprised? Don't be. This is the story of love in the Warhammer 40K universe, a tale of tender hearts and tragic irony in a cosmos that frankly doesn't give a damn. Stick around. It's going to get grim, hopeful, and a little sarcastic. Let's start with the ordinary humans of the Imperium. Trillions of people scattered across a million worlds. They're the nameless billions who live, work, pray, and die under the rule of the God Emperor. You might imagine that in a dystopia of constant war and oppressive authority, there's no room for love or family life. Reality check. Humans will be humans, even under the cruelest conditions. On hive worlds packed with spire-topping nobles and bottom-dwelling gangs, people still fall in love, get married, if the local custom allows, and raise children, however fleetingly. In fact, marriage and family are common throughout the Imperium, though customs vary wildly by planet. On one world, a wedding might be a simple civil union registered in the administratum logs. On another, it's a grand ecclesiarchy, blessed ceremony with incense and choir hymns. Some cultures arrange marriages for political alliances, especially among nobles, while others let love run its course. There's no imperial law against it. The Imperium really doesn't care who you love or how you tie the knot, as long as you pay your tithes and worship the Emperor. Same-sex couples, polyamorous marriages in noble houses, multiple spouses to pump out more future soldiers. All happens somewhere out there. In a universe this vast, it depends on the planet, is the rule. But wherever you go, one thing is constant. Love in 40K is a risky, often heartbreaking endeavor. Because here's the tragic irony. You might find that special someone, only for war or duty or some horrific alien threat to tear you apart moments later. Think about the sheer scale of warfare in the 41st millennium. Entire cities reduced to ash in hours, campaigns that conscript generation after generation. Every day in the Imperium, countless lovers bid farewell as one marches off to battle on some distant front. Countless families pray they'll see their sons, daughters, husbands, and wives again. Many never do. Widows and orphans are practically an industry in the Imperium. The Schola Progenium is full of children who lost their parents to war, now being raised to become soldiers, commissars, or fanatical battle nuns. It's an endless cycle. Love leads to new life. New life grows up to feed the war machine. It's grim, it's dark, but it's the truth. And yet, knowing all that, people still fall in love. They have to. It's the one shred of normalcy and hope they can cling to. Nowhere is that more poignantly clear than among the Imperial Guard, or Astra Militarum, for you proper types. The Guard is millions of everyday folks armed with las guns, thrown into battles against aliens and heretics. They're often young, far from home, and very mortal. Camaraderie in the Guard is legendary. These soldiers form tight bonds. Platoon mates become like siblings. Sometimes they become something more. In the heat of desperate war, it's no surprise that romance blooms among the troops. Male and female guardsmen serve together in many regiments. And yes, they hook up, they fall in love, they grab those fleeting moments of happiness where they can. Imperial tacticians might roll their eyes. Fraternization isn't exactly encouraged in the field, but it happens regardless. There's even a famous Imperial Guard regiment, Gaunt's Ghosts, where several troopers paired up amid the war. One sweet couple, a rifleman named Caffran and a scout named Tona Creed, found love in the trenches. They fought side by side through hellish battles, adopted two war orphans together, and talked of living a peaceful life after the war. Sounds heartwarming, right? Well, this is Warhammer 40k, that romance ended in tragedy when one of them was killed by an enemy infiltrator. Happy endings are scarce on the ground here. The author of those stories, Dan Abnett, has a reputation. Whenever two characters find a little happiness, you start hearing the sad violin, because odds are one of them won't make it to the next chapter. Grimdark giveth, Grimdark taketh away. It's not always immediate tragedy, though. Occasionally, duty and love can coexist, at least for a while. There are Imperial Guard weddings on record. Believe it or not, guardsmen can marry while in service. There's no general regulation forbidding it. In one campaign, an officer of the Tanith First, those ghosts again, actually married his sweetheart after a long courtship during the war. They held a simple ceremony during a lull in the fighting, with comrades cheering them on. For a brief moment, there was joy and celebration in the middle of a bloody crusade. If you're imagining a honeymoon, keep it realistic. They were back on the front lines almost immediately. Still, it happened. Of course, fate being what it is, that story didn't have a fairy tale ending either. I mean, there's a reason fans joke Papa Nurgle, Pestilence, will bless their marriage with tragedy. But the fact it occurred at all is almost miraculous in this universe. Imperial bureaucracy certainly doesn't make it easy. I'm sure there were a dozen forms to fill out in triplicate for a wartime marriage. But it's possible. For most guardsmen, love manifests in humbler ways. Letters to loved ones back home are treasured possessions, read and reread in muddy trenches under distant skies. Picture a young soldier on garrison duty, scribbling by lamplight. My dearest, I hope this letter finds you safe. The rations are awful, but thoughts of you keep me strong. Tell little Marcus Daddy loves him. By the Emperor's grace, I will return. It's heartfelt, ordinary. A scene you could find in any war in history, except that in this case, home might be a smog-choked hive city half a galaxy away, and the soldier expects to face a horde of slavering tyrannids at dawn. The context is insane, but the emotions are the same. And sometimes, yes, sometimes, those soldiers do return home and embrace their sweethearts once more. The Imperium's archives quietly record countless such reunions, and sadly far more that never happened. Of course, often those tender moments are cut brutally short. One of the most touching war stories in 40KA comes from the Siege of Hell's Reach on Armageddon. Amid one of the fiercest battles against an orc horde, a grizzled space marine chaplain, Grimaldus, of the Black Templars, encountered a distraught Imperial guardsman. This weary soldier had miraculously saved the space marine's life during the battle. A heroic feat, but he wasn't rejoicing. The guardsman had fallen in love with a young woman, a fellow defender, during the siege. In the middle of that city's last stand, these two souls found each other, a glimmer of light in utter darkness. They had made plans. If we survive this, we'll start a new life together. But war is cruel. She didn't survive. When the orcs finally fell, the soldier was left holding her dog tags, his future stolen. He confessed to Chaplain Grimaldus that he had nothing left to live for. Now, the Black Templars are fearsome, zealous space marines, not exactly known for compassion, but even Grimaldus paused. In that moment, the battle-hardened marine spoke gently, acknowledging the soldier's pain. He urged him to live on in honor of her memory, to find purpose in what she died for. Imagine that, a superhuman warrior priest in black power armor, comforting a grieving guardsman over a lost love amidst smoking ruins. In the grim darkness, a flicker of humanity. It's one of those rare scenes that can bring a tear to your eye, yes, even in a 40K novel. And it drives home the point. Love can bloom on the battlefield, but the battlefield usually wins. Now, before we get too sentimental, remember, this is the Imperium of Man. It's not a gentle society. Duty comes first, always. If a love or family tie conflicts with duty or the Emperor's will, tragedy often follows. There are countless tales of lovers separated by a deployment that never ends, or families torn apart by a planet's conscription quota. Imperial commanders can be utterly cold about it. If a soldier's attachment becomes a liability, they'll reassign them light years apart without a second thought. And Emperor forbid your loved one shows signs of heresy or mutation. You might be expected to report them, even execute them, personally. Imagine a PDF trooper ordered to shoot his infected wife before she turns into a plague zombie. It's happened. In the Imperium, loving someone can be the ultimate test of loyalty, to your heart or to humanity. Many choose humanity, or are forced to, at great personal cost. Grim and heart-wrenching, but this is the reality for trillions of Imperial citizens. Given all that, it's almost miraculous that ordinary family life even exists in this universe. Yet it does. On countless worlds, after the day's toil in the manufactorum or the fields, husbands and wives come home, assuming a 20-hour work shift allows it, sit at a rickety table with their children, and share a meal of corpse starch rations. They tell each other, "I love you," in whatever local dialect, perhaps under the glow of a guttering lumen globe. Maybe they exchange small gifts on anniversaries, a flower plucked from a toxic sump garden, or a prayer charm from the market. In those moments, they're just people, not tiny cogs in a galactic war machine. But overhead, the propaganda speakers never let them forget. Work hard for him on Terra. Your family's devotion is a weapon of the Emperor. The Imperium co-opts even love and family as tools for its survival. Have kids, raise them loyal, make more soldiers. That's the unspoken expectation. If you read between the lines of Imperial slogans, it's practically, be fruitful and multiply, so we can fill more guard regiments. They won't say it outright, but certainly some planetary governors give incentives for large families. After all, Las Gunfodder doesn't grow on trees. Well, on second thought, on some death worlds, it might. We've talked about the little people. Now let's peek at the grand scale, the Imperial nobility and leaders. Love for them is often tangled up with power. Noble houses marry off sons and daughters to cement alliances, merge trade empires, or curry favor with the High Lords. High-ranking Imperial officials, admirals, generals, governors, also enter these political marriages. Love might bloom as a happy bonus, but it's not the priority. Case in point, the Imperial Knight Houses, those nobles who pilot giant stompy war robots. They trace their lineage back thousands of years, and consorts are chosen very carefully. Aristocracy weds aristocracy. If a young knight pilot fancies a commoner, scandalous, unheard of. Though I'd wager it's happened in secret a few times. Every noble lineage hides a few illicit affair skeletons in the closet, no matter what the heraldry scrolls say. The Adepta Sororitas have an entire branch, the Order's Famulus, whose job is basically playing matchmaker among noble families and keeping genealogical records. These battle sister nuns, ironically, arrange other people's marriages while swearing off any romance themselves. How's that for tragic irony? But they do it to ensure noble bloodlines remain loyal and useful to the Imperium. It's love as statecraft. Picture a stern Sister Hospitaller saying, "For the good of your house and the Emperor, you will marry Lord Vandis's daughter. You will produce strong heirs. The Emperor protects. Very little room for, but I want to marry for love," in that conversation. Yet sometimes the couple in question do grow to love each other after the wedding. Shared duty can evolve into genuine affection over time, or not, and they just tolerate each other while taking lovers on the side. Also a tradition among many decadent nobles. The Imperium has all flavors. Just Imperium things, you know? While we're on the upper crust, let's not forget the most powerful human of all, the Emperor of mankind. Did the Emperor, a being of perpetual golden glory sitting on the ultimate gilded chair, ever love anyone in a human way? That's a lore mystery and a half. He certainly loved humanity as a whole in a grand, idealistic sense. He literally sacrificed everything, including being a present dad, for his dream of human unity. But individually? The Emperor's personal life is an enigma. Some whisper he had many companions in the ancient past, maybe even children, illegitimate sensei or perpetual offspring in obscure lore, but nothing is confirmed in mainstream canon. What we do know is he treated his 20 Primarchs, genetically engineered demigod sons, with a sort of idealized fatherly love, mixed with heavy dollops of, "I made you as tools for my plan." So, not the warmest fuzzy love. If anything, the heresy proved that lack of open affection was a problem. The Emperor's favorite son, Horus, loved his father deeply once, and the Emperor likely loved Horus back, but perhaps didn't show it well. That relationship ended in the worst family breakup ever. Horus rebelled, chaos ensued, literally, and father and son fought to the death in the throne room. The Emperor slew Horus to save mankind, and in doing so was himself mortally wounded and interred on the golden throne for eternity. Talk about tragic irony. The Emperor's great family shattered, his beloved son turned arch-traitor, and the only physical bond left between them is the Emperor's slowly decaying corpse and the psychic wound of that betrayal. If Shakespeare wrote it, you'd call it overdramatic. In 40K, it's just history. The Primarchs themselves had fascinating relationships, brotherhood, rivalry, even bromances of a sort. Take Sanguinius, the angelic Primarch of the Blood Angels, and Horus. They were the closest of brothers, genuinely fond of each other. When Horus fell to chaos, we won't dive into chaos romance, don't worry, that's a can of particularly nasty worms, it broke Sanguinius's heart. Yet, Sanguinius still loved Horus enough to try to save him, or at least stop him. In the final battle, Sanguinius confronted Horus. He sacrificed himself in a futile attempt to bring his brother back to the light, or at least buy the Emperor time. Horus repaid that love by mercilessly killing Sanguinius. Moments later, the Emperor struck Horus down, howling with grief. This is the kind of family drama on a galactic scale that makes your Thanksgiving squabbles look tame. It's love distorted by pride and chaos, ending in utter tragedy. Very on brand for 40K. Now let's pivot to an entirely different breed, the Space Marines, the Adeptus Astartes. These guys are genetically engineered super soldiers, built for war and nothing else. They're taken, as children, from their families, indoctrinated, physically altered, and essentially reborn as immortal warriors who know no fear. Unsurprisingly, they also know no romance, at least not in any normal human sense. Astartes are often described as monks or fraternal orders. They make vows, live in fortress monasteries, and dedicate every fiber of their being to war and to the Emperor. That doesn't leave room for dating, I'm afraid. A space marine doesn't swipe right on Battlefleet Tinder. They're likely celibate by conditioning, and many sources imply they have little to no sex drive at all after the implantation of all those gene seed organs and hypnotherapy. Physically, they're certainly capable. Yes, they have genitals, if you must know. Biology isn't removed, just suppressed. But psychologically, such desires have been redirected or blunted. The love of a space marine is instead something more abstract. Love of duty, love of the chapter, love of the emperor. They call each other brother, and they mean it with all their hearts. Whatever hearts they have left that aren't supercharged, multi-chambered machines of war. The bond between battle brothers is incredibly strong, forged in combat, tempered by shared pain and glory. They will die for each other without hesitation. Is that love? In a way, yes, a kind of platonic, comradely love that runs deeper than simple friendship. They don't express it with hugs. Emperor forbid, though, a pair of Terminator-armored marines clanking in an awkward hug would be a sight. Instead, they express it through absolute loyalty. A Space Marine's brotherhood might be the closest thing to family he has. And many chapters refer to themselves as the sons of their Primarch. It's all very masculine, stoic, and for the Emperor, but it's a form of love nonetheless, just weaponized and armored. Still, don't expect a Space Marine romance novel anytime soon. Black Library, the publishers of 40K fiction, tread very carefully around portraying Astartes with any hint of romantic or sexual feelings. The idea of a space marine even being interested in someone romantically is pretty much off-limits in official lore. Fans often joke about it. Do space marines date? Do they have a Valentine's Day in the chapter? What would it even look like? Let me paint that picture sarcastically. Brother Angelos gifting Sister Verity a bolt shell engraved with hearts, whispering hymns of devotion by candlelight in a Gothic chapel, and then a chaplain barges in, yelling heresy. End of story. Not happening. Authors sometimes do depict Marines with very intense relationships, friendships or mentor-pupil bonds, and then go out of their way to clarify. Of course, this was purely brotherly and not romantic, lest the reader get any ideas. It's almost humorous scenes where Marines share a close moment, and then the text practically winks and says, "No homo." Looking at you, Horus Heresy novels. The truth is, the Space Marines' real love is war. They are quite literally in love with war. It's what they live for, kill for, die for. Some would say the only thing a space marine might love is the Emperor, and even that is more worship than love. Now, contrast them with their female counterparts, the Sisters of Battle, Adepta Sororitas. If space marines are warrior monks, the sisters are warrior nuns, and they take it just as seriously. These battle-armored, bolter-wielding nuns are married to the Emperor in a figurative sense. Their faith in the God Emperor is absolute, and they channel all their passion and devotion into that faith. They even used to be called the Brides of the Emperor back in the day, a somewhat literal name for an early incarnation of their order. While that title was metaphorical, it underlines the point. A sororitas's love is reserved for the Emperor alone. Personal relationships, especially romantic or sexual, are strictly against their vows. You won't find a Sister of Battle sneaking out of the convent for a secret tryst. It's just not in their discipline. To them, love equals sign devotion to Emperor and Sisters in Arms. They certainly care for their fellow sisters, a deep sisterly bond born of shared conviction, but they'll never prioritize one sister over duty or doctrine. In fact, a popular fan discussion involved a video game where players wanted to romance a Sister of Battle companion. The consensus? Good luck, she's literally not interested, and probably views it as heresy, or at least a distraction. The sister in question would likely lecture the would-be suitor about purging sin and then spend the evening polishing her bolter, and not in a euphemistic way actual gun maintenance. So yes, if you've got a crush on a sister of battle, perhaps join the ecclesiarchy and start praying. That's as close as you'll get. Now, I know what you're thinking. Surely someone, somewhere in 40K, is getting some actual romance beyond tragic guard flings and war brother bromance. Indeed, we do have some star-crossed lovers and intriguing pairings to explore, especially in the world of the Inquisition and other characters who aren't bound by as many rules. One of the most famous and unorthodox love stories in Warhammer 40K is the ongoing romantic tension between Commissar Caiaphas Kane and Inquisitor Amberly Vale. If you haven't heard of Caiaphas Kane, he's basically a hero of the Imperium by accident, a charming, self-deprecating commissar who survives insane battles, mostly by trying to save his own skin, but ends up saving everyone else in the process. Through his adventures, he frequently crosses paths with Amberly, an inquisitor of the Ordo Xenos, alien hunters. Their relationship is a delicious cocktail of flirtatious banter, mutual respect, and good old-fashioned will-they-won't-they. Spoiler, they did, at least eventually. They keep things discreet. An inquisitor and a commissar can't exactly go public with a relationship without raising eyebrows, the political fallout alone. But off the record, they share a genuine affection and trust. In the Kane novels, about half the time you can find Kane worrying about two things: the terrifying enemy trying to kill him and the dangerously attractive inquisitor, who also might get him killed, dragging him into her missions. Their flirtation is a running subplot. Amberly teases Kane about his past dalliances. He's accidentally gotten engaged before, long story. And Kane internally panics between, "That's my girlfriend, Emperor help me," and, "Oh throne, what trouble is she getting me into now?" It's downright cute amid the chaos of Tyranid invasions and Necron uprisings. They even have a short story where they try to go on a romantic getaway, just the two of them. And naturally, they get interrupted by a kidnapping attempt and have to blast their way out. Date night 40K style, candlelit dinner with a side of bolter fire. Yet, through all the snark and danger, Kane and Amberly's bond feels real and surprisingly sweet. He eventually more or less stops womanizing elsewhere because, as he quips, "I only have room for one extremely dangerous woman in my life." Smart man, in a universe this harsh, their relationship stands out as a rare example of a functional, if unorthodox, romance that doesn't immediately end in tragedy. It's as close to a happy couple as 40K gets, albeit one that bonds over fighting aliens and covering up chaos cults. The Inquisition, being outside normal rules, has other interesting cases. There's the legendary Inquisitor Gregor Eisenhorn, a staunch man of duty, who nonetheless harbored deep feelings for a woman in his retinue, the beautiful and resourceful Elizabeth Bequine. Was it love or just close friendship? It's left a bit ambiguous, but Eisenhorn's anguish at losing her, in rather tragic circumstances involving demonic possession and sacrifice, suggests his feelings went beyond mere camaraderie. It's a classic case of deep feelings we cannot act upon. He never had the luxury to truly be with her. There was always a crisis or moral quandary, and when she was gone, he plunged ever darker down his lonely path. It adds a layer of humanity to an otherwise grim story of an inquisitor struggling with the ends justify the means dilemma. In his heart, Eisenhorn's love and loss of Bequine is a wound as raw as any demon's claw mark. Again, love in 40K tends to hurt, even if you're an inquisitor. For a more contemporary and rare example of open love, there's a story of Inquisitor Brynla, who literally goes on a personal crusade fueled by love. In the novel Mark of Faith, an inquisitor's wife is killed. Yes, she had a wife. Confirming same-sex marriage is alive and well in the 41st millennium, and the Inquisitor's grief and love drive her to seek a holy relic that could turn the tide of war. On the other side of that story, a fallen space marine, a Thousand Suns sorcerer, technically a Chaos space marine, though we'll keep the Chaos details light, is trying to resurrect his long-dead brother, driven by fraternal love. So you have this poignant setup, love versus love amid war. The Inquisitor powered by love for her lost spouse, the renegade marine powered by love for his brother, both willing to risk everything. It's rare in 40K to see love as such a central motivator, and of course it leads to a confrontation, because nothing says I love you like clashing over an artifact on a battlefield of corpses, right? I won't spoil the ending, but you can guess it's not a mushy happily ever after. Still, it's a compelling example that in Warhammer stories, love can be the engine of the plot, just as much as hatred or duty, and it humanizes characters we'd otherwise see only as grim warriors or faceless agents. Even among the shadows of the Officio Assassinorum, those emotionless elite killers, rumors of forbidden love exist. Veterans of the fandom still whisper about a legendary tale called Love Can Bloom. It's not an official publication, but a famous fan-created story that's practically reached mythic status. It tells of a deadly imperial assassin, a man bred to kill without question, who crosses paths with a graceful Eldar Farseer on a war-torn planet. They're supposed to be enemies. He should have put a bullet in her head, and she should have scorched him with psychic lightning. Yet, through a series of unlikely events, they come to understand each other. Respect turns to affection, and against every law and logic of the galaxy, these two killers from different species fall in love on the battlefield. A human and an alien, an imperial and an Eldar, finding solace in one another amid bloodshed. It's the ultimate star-crossed romance. To the Imperium, such a thing would be heresy of the highest order. If the Inquisition ever hears this tale, they'd have coronaries. But to those who know the story, it's strangely beautiful. They ask, meaningly, can love bloom on a battlefield? And here the answer was yes, at least for a fleeting moment before duty inevitably tore them apart. Whether you consider it just a fanciful fable or a hopeful allegory, the existence of this story in the fandom underscores something. Even in a setting as dark as 40K, people crave that spark of warmth. They imagine it, they write about it, because it feels almost rebellious against the despair. A little forbidden love as a treat to remind us that Warhammer's world, for all its brutality, is still populated by thinking, feeling beings, not just emotionless cogs. Speaking of aliens, Xenos, as the Imperium derogatorily calls them, how do other species fare in the matters of love and family? Humans certainly don't have a monopoly on those emotions. The Eldar, Eldari, for example, are an ancient race of elf-like aliens who feel emotions far more intensely than humans do. Love for an Eldar can be a profound, soul-shaking experience. In their glory days, the Eldar were so subsumed by pursuit of pleasure and sensation that it literally birthed a new god of excess, Slaanesh, the Chaos God, that, among other things, embodies decadent passion. We're not going there in detail, but suffice to say the Eldar learned the hard way that too much indulgence can destroy your civilization. Post-Cataclysm, the surviving Eldar are extremely cautious about strong emotions. They follow paths, disciplined lifestyles that keep their emotions and desires in check to avoid waking that sleeping monster of excess again. So an Eldar on the path of the warrior focuses on war, an Eldar on the path of the poet focuses on art, etc. Where does love fit in? Possibly the path of the lover is just metaphorical, but Eldar can and do bond, marry, have children. They often life bond to one partner deeply. It's just all done within their strict cultural frameworks to contain the intensity. Eldar romance in lore isn't explored much, but we get glimpses. For example, Eldar Exarchs, permanently war-dedicated warriors, give up personal ties, but Eldar civilians or lower-ranked warriors can have lovers. The tragedy is, with their population so low, and souls at risk of being eaten by Slaanesh when they die, every relationship has a shadow over it. When an Eldar says, "Till death do us part," death might mean their soul gets devoured by a hellish god unless saved in a spirit stone. That adds some pressure. They do have families, though. Imagine a pair of Eldar lovers standing on a wraithbone balcony of a craft world, holding hands, gazing at the stars, perhaps remembering a lost friend because every Eldar has lost someone to She Who Thirsts. It's romantic, but with a perpetual ache. In one story, an Eldar ranger fell in love with a human woman on a fringe world and quietly protected her from the shadows until he died defending that planet. Did she ever know? Possibly not. It was a one-sided, bittersweet devotion, very Eldar in its melancholy. And consider the Eldar goddess Lilaeth's prophecy that one day a human and an Eldar will unite to conceive a savior. A myth that some in lore mention. It's likely just legend or a far future plot seed, but it shows even the Eldar mythmakers toy with the idea of love bridging the species. Then there are the Dark Eldar, Drukhari, twisted cousins of the Eldar who revel in torture and excess to stave off their own doom. If the Craftworlders are cautious lovers, the Dark Eldar are the ultimate hedonistic sociopaths. Love, in a genuine sense, is almost dead in Qol-Mora, their shadowy city. They see affection as weakness. Betrayal and pain are their currency. Any relationships there are built on power plays, sadism, and manipulation. A Dark Eldar might keep a favored consort as a status symbol, but the moment they bore them or show vulnerability, that lover might end up as the next torture exhibit. However, even in that depraved society, there are rare tales of something akin to love. One dark legend speaks of a Dark Eldar Archon who became obsessed with an Imperial prisoner, not just as a plaything, but fascinated by the human's unwavering love for someone else. The Archon couldn't comprehend it, and thus became enthralled by the concept. It led to a twisted, deadly game of "I'll make you love me," which, surprise, ended with neither of them happy, or alive, probably. For Drukhari, love usually comes in the form of "I love the way you scream," which, well, not exactly the romantic vibe we're going for. Suffice to say, if any race has zero hallmark moments, it's the Dark Eldar. How about the blue-skinned collectivist Tau? The Tau Empire is all about the greater good, a philosophy of societal harmony and sacrifice for the community. They're a younger race, more optimistic, relatively speaking, and organized. Do Tau fall in love? Almost certainly, yes. They have a fairly normal biology with males and females, and their culture doesn't seem to have prohibitions on relationships, aside from perhaps keeping them within the same caste for practicality. A fire warrior is likely to pair with another fire caste member, etc., since each caste lives and works separately. There's an adorable hint in one novel of two water caste diplomats, a male and a female, arranged to be together by the ethereal leaders. Almost like a matchmaking for optimal genetic and political outcome. The two were both diplomats, water caste, and the Ethereals basically said, "You two would produce fine offspring for the Empire." Romantic, huh? But what's funny is, by human standards, that sounds clinical, yet the two Tau in question might actually develop affection in their cooperative work. The Tau believe in love as part of harmony, They likely celebrate pair bonding in some state-approved way. We haven't seen Tau weddings described, but it wouldn't shock me if they have a ceremony where two citizens pledge to raise the next generation for the greater good. If anything, the Tau attitude to love is pragmatic but positive. As long as it serves society, love is good. They probably even have a day in the calendar for celebrating mates or something. Greater Good Greetings Card Day? Who knows? On the battlefield, Tau aren't as individually passionate as humans, but you can bet they fight to protect their families back home, too. There's a known Tau heroine, Commander Shadow Sun, who was placed in cryosleep between wars. Rumor has it she left behind someone, maybe a lover, in the past, and everyone she knew aged without her. That's a personal tragedy, the lore hints at. Duty separated her from any chance at normal life or love. Even the Tau have sacrifices that include personal happiness for the cause. Let's not forget the Necrons, ancient robotic undead kings of the galaxy. Surely these emotionless metal skeletons know nothing of love. At first glance, correct. They purge their flesh and with it seemingly their empathy. But scratch the surface of living metal, and you'll find traces of who they once were. 60 million years ago, the Necrons were the Necrontyr, a flesh-and-blood species. They had families, lovers, children, dreams. All of that was stripped away when they underwent biotransference to become immortal machines. Yet, some Necrons have ghosts of their old selves haunting their minds. One of the most oddly touching relationships in 40K is between two Necron characters, Overlord Zondrek and his loyal second-in-command, Obyron. Zondrek's a brilliant Necron lord who, due to a glitch or madness, thinks he's still fighting ancient wars from the past. He doesn't realize he's a robot, basically reliving old campaigns in his mind. Obyron is his vassal, who remains utterly loyal and cares for his lord deeply. Obyron watches over him, makes sure none of their allies take advantage of Zondrek's delusions, and guides him gently. It's deep loyalty, perhaps even love in a friendship sense, transcending soulless logic. In one story, Zondrek has a rare moment of clarity where he realizes what he has become, a horrifying awakening from his pleasant illusion. He's devastated. Obyron is shaken to his core, seeing his master in anguish, and does everything to comfort him and restore his deluded peace, essentially choosing his friend's happiness over cold reality. If that's not a form of love, I don't know what is. It's entirely non-romantic, but it's profound. Two immortals bound by history and loyalty, one protecting the other out of genuine fondness. Another Necron example. Some dynasties still practice arranged pairings to produce offspring back in flesh times, and carry those concepts forward politically. They might speak of past spouses or lost children, but in an abstract way, since now they physically can't have such connections. There's a tragic undertone to Necron existence, what they sacrificed, love, family, mortality, for immortality. Some may regret it quietly. So when a Necron overlord stares at the stars from his tomb, does some part of him yearn for the wife he once held in his arms 60 million years ago on a long-dead world? Maybe. That's a sci-fi tearjerker right there. Now for the orcs. This will be quick because, well, orcs is orcs. They are a fungoid, spore-based species bred for war. They pop out of mushroom-like spores, fully formed, or grow in sac cocoons in the earth. They don't have traditional families or mating. The closest thing to an orc parent is the largest orc in the area, the war boss, who they all sort of treat as a leader figure. Orcs do not feel romantic love. They hardly even understand friendship beyond, "This is my war buddy who hasn't been killed by me yet." However, orcs do use the word love sometimes, as in, "Oi, love a good fight." They love war, literally. An orc's heart swells at the thought of a big proper war. They experience joy and excitement in battle, akin to how a human might feel about, say, a passionate affair. Except for orcs, it's all about crumpin' heads. They also can form attachments of a sort. An orc might have a favorite gun. Old Bessie, best shooter Eivard. Or a loyal grot servant he doesn't kill because he kinda likes the little runt. Is that love? For an orc, that's as close as it gets. You could cheekily say orcs love their gods, Gork and Mork, but honestly, that love is more raw enthusiasm. If you tried to explain human romance to an orc, he'd probably scratch his head, then smash it, because he suspects you're talking nonsense. So no, there's no orc Romeo and Juliet. More like Romeork and Juliork bonding over a pile of loot. Then one shoots the other for said loot. Love hurts, indeed. And the Tyranids, oh boy, they are extragalactic hive-mind bio-beasts that only know how to eat, multiply, and consume. They have as much capacity for love as a virus or a shark. You won't find a Hormagaunt bringing chocolates to a Genis dealer for date night. They are the one faction completely devoid of individuality or emotion, as we understand it. That said, in a twisted way, the Tyranid hive mind loves its collective self. The closest analogy might be a parent-child relationship, where the parent devours the child. Actually, scratch that, there's no analogy. Tyranids just are. However, their infiltrating agents, the Genis dealer cults, are interesting. These are human or alien converts infected by a Genis dealer's kiss who form secret cults worshipping the Tyranid hive as gods. Oddly, Genis dealer cults often mimic family structures. The patriarch is like the father. The brood brothers and sisters all feel a familial bond through the hive mind. They actually feel love and devotion, but it's artificially induced to serve the cult. A cultist genuinely loves their brood family with fanatical loyalty. Parents infected by the cult will still love their non-infected children, though tragically they might end up offering those children to the cult to be infected, thinking they're gifting them salvation. Twisted, yes, but from their perspective, an act of love. Join us in eternal togetherness, child. It's horrifying, but that's 40K's way of corrupting even love into a weapon. When the Tyranid Hive Fleet arrives, these cultists go willingly into the maw of the swarm, joyful to be united with their gods. It's essentially a big, unhappy family reunion where everyone gets eaten by the hungry grandma that is the hive mind. So any way you cut it, Tyranid love ends in digestion. Not exactly poetic. We've taken a grand tour of love across species and societies, and you might notice a common thread. Almost every instance of love in Warhammer 40K carries a note of tragedy or irony. In a universe built on conflict, love is invariably thwarted or compromised by the demands of survival, duty, or corruption. But that's precisely what makes those rare moments of genuine affection stand out. Like tiny, stubborn flowers growing on a battlefield strewn with skulls. They're precious because everything around them is hostile. The grim darkness makes the light of love shine brighter, however briefly. Think of a battlefield medic in the Imperial Guard, cradling a dying soldier who whispers his final love message to a faraway spouse. The medic will later write to that spouse, delivering those last words. A small act of kindness and love in the middle of carnage. Or imagine a young mother on a besieged world, clutching her infant and praying to the Emperor that her child will live to see peace. She might sing a lullaby over the distant thunder of artillery. That juxtaposition is powerful. Warhammer is full of big heroes and villains. But often it's these intimate, human moments that truly hit us in the gut. Even the superhuman characters are not immune to longing. Robute Guillemon, a Primarch resurrected in the current timeline, finds himself a stranger in a new age, grappling with loneliness and colossal responsibility. Fans half-jokingly speculate about a subtle spark between him and Yvrine, the Eldar prophetess who played a key role in resurrecting him. It's mostly fan imagination. There's no canonical romance there. But the fact that people want to pair the big ultramarine demigod and the alien sorceress says something. We're hungry for any hint of connection in this grim universe. And who knows? Both are essentially souls out of their time, trying to save their peoples. Perhaps there's a mutual understanding that could, in another life, be friendship or more. If nothing else, it's a fun what-if that adds a dash of space operatic romance to the saga. Now, let's be clear. Warhammer 40K will never be a romance-forward setting. It's not a love story, it's a war story. But precisely because of that, the bits of love that peek through are all the more compelling. They serve as a counterpoint to the darkness. As one astute observer put it, without any hope or warmth, grimdark can become one note. But throw in a forbidden love or an heroic sacrifice made for love, and suddenly the darkness has context. It feels heavier, more real. We see what's at stake beyond abstract concepts of empire and chaos. It personalizes the war. There's also a layer of satire and dark humor in how love is portrayed, or squashed, in 40K. The setting has its tongue-in-cheek a lot of times. It exaggerates the bleakness to a sometimes absurd degree, which means any Hallmark-style lovey-dovey moment would be absurd too. So the universe almost seems to conspire to crush romance, lest it break the tone. This itself becomes a kind of running joke among readers. Oh, two characters are expressing affection? Cue the incoming Genestealer or Sniper round. It's a known trope. Warhammer characters can't have nice things. If someone is happily married, they're either a background character or about to have something awful happen. Commissar Yarik, the famous hero of Armageddon, never married or had kids, likely because he's been too busy fighting orcs his whole life. But also, the universe just won't allow that kind of contentment for him. Ibram Gaunt, of Gaunt's Ghosts, had a brief romance in his youth that resulted in a son he didn't know about for years. When he finally meets the boy during a war, it's complicated and short-lived. It's almost like the narrative says, duty trumps personal life, every time. Tragic irony indeed, the things they fight to protect, family, love normal life, are the very things they seldom get to enjoy. And yet, with a wry smile, we can acknowledge that even the High Lords on Terra, those crusty old bureaucrats, were once young and in love, or at least in arranged marriages. Even Space Marines, despite everything, refer to each other as brothers and form intense bonds that, if not romantic, are deeply loving in a fraternal way. Even the Chaos Marines, the bad guys, sometimes show twisted camaraderie or obsession that mirrors love, just filtered through insanity. For instance, in one story, two Chaos cultists are briefly shown caring for each other tenderly amid the madness, right before a loyalist River appears and brutally ends their little moment. It's a blink-and-miss-it demonstration that, yes, even heretics can love. Not that the Imperium cares when they purge them. We should also mention those individuals whose love is not for a person, but for something higher or broader. Many characters effectively fall in love with ideals or objects. There are commanders who speak of their starships as if they were lovers, the captain who goes down with his ship, whispering apologies to her spirit as they both burn up. The tank crews of the Imperial Guard sometimes paint pin-up art or names on their beloved tanks, a tradition in real militaries too, forging a personal connection with their war machines. A Lehman Russ tank named Gloria might have a crew who joke that she's a temperamental lady, but they couldn't live without her. The Adeptus Mechanicus priests definitely exhibit a form of love for knowledge, for the machine god, for the machines they tend. To a tech priest, gently polishing a sacred circuit might be as romantic as giving a diamond ring. They literally replace body parts with bionics because they prefer the cold, reliable touch of metal. Love of the flesh is supplanted by love of the machine. It's bizarre, but it's their thing. And hey, we saw with Magos Hest and Magos Tauren in the Horus Heresy era that two tech priests can share a binary bond that is effectively love. When Tauren mourned Hest, she admitted, "We were close, a binary form. I miss him. I do this for him." That might be one of the most heartfelt declarations from a cyborg you'll hear. She even decoded a data puzzle using a date meaningful to them both, like a hidden love note in code. If the machine can love, then truly anything is possible in this universe. As our journey through love in Warhammer 40K comes to a close, you might feel a mix of emotions. A bit of sadness at all the tragedy, maybe a chuckle at the absurdity, perhaps even a strange hope. And that's appropriate. The story of love in 40K is bittersweet to its core. For every tender kiss, there's a rain of blood. For every promise made, a promise broken. Yet, hope lives in those moments. A guardsman proposing marriage on the eve of battle, knowing he might die but daring to imagine a future. An alien warrior queen sparing an enemy because she recognizes in him a kindred soul. A battle brother carrying his wounded comrade through fire because I will not leave you, brother. These acts defy the cruelty of the setting. They are, in a way, rebellions against the despair, however small or doomed. In the end, what is love in Warhammer 40,000? It's a weapon, a weakness, a comfort, a curse. It's the Emperor's great love for humanity that ultimately demands unimaginable sacrifices from humanity. It's the common man's love that the Imperium harnesses to keep him fighting, even as that same love might one day make him desert or rebel. It's the glimmer of the humane within the inhumane. And sometimes it's just two people finding a brief respite from all the horror, even if only for a night or a minute or a single shared smile before the world ends. So, can love bloom in the grim darkness of the far future? Yes, it can, like a rose in a volcano, beautiful and all too often consumed by the fire around it. It rarely gets a happy ending. But for those who experience it, even briefly, it means everything. Perhaps that's one of the most powerful things in the Warhammer universe. Not the Titans or the super soldiers, but a simple human heart beating with love and defiance, refusing to be hardened completely by a cruel galaxy. It's ironic and tragic. The more you care, the more it hurts in the end. But it's also affirming. In a galaxy where there is only war, love is the quiet rebellion. It's saying, we are not just cogs in your brutal machine. We feel, we hope. It's the last sliver of light that makes the darkness bearable. And as long as one guardsman writes a love letter, as long as one mother sings to her child, as long as one battle brother mourns a fallen friend, the far future is not only war. Because love, no matter how doomed or distant, still lives in the 41st millennium. In conclusion, Warhammer 40K might not be a universe about love, but it's certainly a universe with love, fragile, flickering, and often snuffed out, yet never completely extinguished. And that, dear listener, is as inspiring as it is heartbreaking. So the next time you picture the battlefields of the 41st millennium, don't just imagine the roar of bolters and the clashing of swords. Imagine, too, somewhere in that rubble, two soldiers holding hands, promising each other that someday, somehow, they'll find peace together. It's a promise that likely won't be kept, but the fact they make it at all is what keeps humanity human, even in a future as dark as this. That is the true secret triumph of love in Warhammer 40K. Against all odds, it endures. In the grim darkness of the far future, there is only war. But if you look closely, there's also a flicker of love, defiantly burning against the night. And as every good 40K fan knows, even the smallest light can hold back the darkness, if only for a while. Thank you for listening, and remember, hug your loved ones, with power armor off, preferably. And may the Emperor, or whoever you love, protect you.